Okay, thank you, operator. Let me just mention two or three topics here, maybe four, then we could talk about whatever you want to. One on the trafficking bill, both the sexual exploitation trafficking and labor trafficking. Certainly would be right and good if we could move on to that. As you all know, Congresswoman Wagner in the House has been a particularly forceful advocate for dealing with this. Also, the Western District in Missouri is the highest U.S. Attorney's District in the country in terms of prosecution in this area. So this is clearly something that is close to where we are. I think Congresswoman Wagner has said that St. Louis was a regional trafficking hub. The Western District on the other side of the state, highest district for prosecutions. This is not something that doesn't impact us. It's been endorsed by a lot of groups, and I would hope that we could move to this. It's an important issue on Iran. Obviously, a lot of discussions following the letter that I signed with 45 others and Senator Cotton a week or so ago. I think that's frankly served the good purpose of calling attention to the fact that this is a presidential agreement, not a treaty. There's no long-term obligation. The Iranians responding by saying, well, really, international law is what would prevail here as opposed to the law of any country. I don't know very many Americans that think that that's the standard we should set. The Senate should be involved, and I think it's possible that as early as March 25th, Senate Foreign Relations Committee with Senator Corker and Senator Menendez could bring a bill to the floor that requires congressional involvement and, more importantly, Senate involvement, more importantly, as it relates to the Constitution, Senate involvement. I think later today, the Senate Budget Committee plans to unveil a budget resolution that will we'll let them talk about the specifics of that, but I think they have made it well understood that there'd be a second chance to look at defense spending later, and that this would be a budget that would balance in 10 years. The budget's critically important to get done. It's something that the past majority failed to do, and in fact, there hasn't been an agreed-to budget for 7 years now, even though the law requires both the House and Senate to pass a budget by the 15th of April, and I hope that we're on track to meet that deadline and have a House and Senate budget passed, hopefully even by the end of next week, and then come back and see if we can make those two budgets reconcile together so that we have all the benefits of a budget that would allow us to move forward more clearly with the appropriations process, have that debate in a public and transparent way, and also have the potential to respond to whatever the court decides in the next few weeks on Obama's health care plan, have the potential to respond with 51 votes in the Senate under the special budget agreements and authorities you can get in what's called reconciliation. Another issue that we should deal with in the next few days, and we'll have to deal with one way or another, is the doctor payment issue that frankly has now, for 17 times, the Congress has said, really, this pay for it doesn't make any sense. It was my first year in the Congress when that act was passed. I voted against it, thinking that it would never work as a pay for, and as it turned out, it never has worked as a pay for. Community health centers might be part of that doctor payment issue. There's a cliff that they face. They're really important to our health care delivery system in our state, and I am hopeful that we'll see those community health centers and that cliff dealt with. The president's health care plan created a mandatory spending cliff at the end of 5 years, but the pressure on those health care centers has not gone away, and the cliff, we shouldn't allow them to go over that cliff as well. So let's go ahead and go to what you want to, so we don't run out of questions here.
Good morning, Senator. I noticed today that some lawmakers in Argentina have taken a move similar to what you and your fellow Republican senators have done in sending a letter regarding the negotiations on Iran. When a nation like Argentina jumps into the fray like this, does it? How do you think that sheds a different light on what you're doing, knowing that the other countries and seem to have somewhat similar concerns?
Well, I'm not an expert on the Argentine Constitution, so I don't know what the legislative involvement there is. I do know that the U.S. Constitution would indicate that for any long-term agreement that the Senate needs to be involved, and why you'd want to enter into an agreement that didn't have long-term protections and capacity would be the question I'd be asking. The president continues to see the Congress in this and other areas as more of an inconvenience than a constitutional partner, and I think this is an important constitutional question to have. There was nothing in that letter that I hadn't been saying for at least a year, and nothing in that letter that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee had been saying for at least 6 months. But the good thing about the letter is it called attention to the issues we've been trying to call attention to. And, you know, if you're going to sign these letters, the goal is to get people to talk about the topic and to move that topic in the right direction. Hopefully, the Constitution will matter here, and the president will understand that these negotiations are well served by letting the constitutional process work in our country.
Yes, Senator, I didn't have a question, just a quick statement, a positive statement to let you know that bad energy policy disproportionately hurts poorest and most vulnerable. That was one of the highest hits. We got over 16,000 hits with that article, that op-ed that you wrote. I just wanted to thank you. It made sense, and it explained it in detail.
Well, thank you, Gentry. I saw you ran that op-ed, and I was pleased that you did. And, you know, as we said in the op-ed that you ran, when you do things that increase people's utility bill, the people that are hurt by that are the people that have the biggest challenge right now to pay their bill. Things go away for them and their families when that bill goes up. And then on the other end of that, for young people, the utility bill and what that bill looks like makes a big difference in future job opportunities with good take-home pay, and we ought to be looking at those groups as we look at these regulations. So thanks for running that op-ed.
Good morning, Senator.
Morning, Brian.
You mentioned the trafficking bill, and an AP piece actually mentioned, well, talking about that, took the Democrats to task for not thoroughly reading, apparently, the bill. And that kind of raised the general question to us about all the legislation that passes your desk. Just in general, how do you read all the measures, or do you parse it out to some of the others that some of your aides, and how do you go about the actual work of reading each and every bill that passes your desk?
Well, I look very carefully at any bill that I sponsor or any bill that I vote for in committee, and you know, this is a bill that unanimously came out of the Judiciary Committee. There was an effort in the committee even to amend the section right below the section that now everybody appears to have some question with or surprise that it was in there. They had to be looking at it when they were looking at the other amendment. I really can't explain why people have changed their position on this. I am told by by Congresswoman Wagner and others in the House that the language that came out of committee and the language that is the language in the House bill is important to moving this forward. So I don't know how you explain, you know, people amending bills and not seeing what's in the sentence right above the bill they're amending. There's lots of legislation, but particularly for the legislation you vote on or the legislation you sponsor, doing your best to look at that carefully is an important part of the job.
Good morning, Senator. The Corps of Engineers looks right now to be the closest it's ever been to completing a plan for the New Madrid Floodway Project. The final environmental impact statement's getting ready to be finalized after a review by an independent panel. And can you comment on the progress that's been made?
Well, Aaron, the progress, as you know, has been excruciatingly slow, and I'm looking forward to that the final impact statement being out there so it could be more fully commented on. You know, this has been years in the making now. I don't know that any facts have changed, but it'll be interesting to see how the Corps interprets the facts that are out there and what their reaction's been from the other government agencies involved. I think there are several thousand acres right now underwater at the end of the New Madrid floodway that if you had the pumps in place, that the planting season would be ready to begin at a much earlier time. If you've seen that project, as you have and as I have many times, this is not a pristine wetland area. It's a farming area that is impacted in the spring by water that it's possible not to have there. But let's look at the plan. I've been insisting on seeing this this plan for a long time, or the environmental impact study for a long time, and I'm ready to see it.
Good morning, Senator. I know you've already had St. Joseph people in your office today, so I appreciate you indulging one more question.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to ask you about the transportation funding that expires in May. It seems that members of both parties believe a long-term solution is what's needed. In your view, what do you see that from? What's keeping that from getting done?
Well, Ken, we did, by the way, we had a great delegation from St. Joe here today. I was able to commend the chamber on its designation as one of the very highest recognitions that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce can give a community and a chamber. We were talking about transportation issues that involve the levees, the river, and then other transportation issues as well. We're in a unique place in our state to take advantage of being the crossroads of so many things, whether it's the river system in the country, the highway system in the country, or the rail system in the country. And what do we do to use that to position ourselves so that we can work hard to find the kind of jobs with good take-home pay that people need and families need? The short-term solutions to the highway bill are not the kind of solutions we need. I'd say the obstacles, your question was about obstacles, probably the biggest obstacle right now is that for some time the revenue from the gas tax hasn't met what are reasonable goals for the highway bill. And we can't continue to fund the highway bill out of general revenue, but there's really nobody interested right now in looking at the gas tax as providing more revenue than it does. I think that's unlikely to happen and is not going to happen. So where are ways that we could look to fill that gap for the next 5 or 6 years? And I'm working hard to try to figure out a way to do that. I think there is a possibility of doing that by taxing profits that companies have made overseas that are currently stranded overseas at a lower rate than the rate that they're not paying by not bringing them back, but at a rate that would go into the transportation bill and close that $20 billion or so annual gap. So I believe there's a great desire in the Congress to have a 5 or 6 year highway bill rather than a 2 year or 6 month highway bill. And I'm certainly going to do everything I can to see that we get that highway bill stretched out in a way that the federal government and, more importantly, states and communities can make the best possible plan and use that money in the best possible way. You're always going to get a better bid for a 3 year project than you are for six-month projects trying to do the same thing, and hopefully we'll see an appropriate extension of that highway bill before the authorization ends the last day of May.
Hi, Senator. Thanks for doing this again.
Yes, Chuck.
I want to ask you about Ferguson. Can you give us an update on what you're hearing? What's the latest that you're hearing as far as DOJ's negotiation with the folks in Ferguson? And related to that, what did you think of Lieutenant Governor Kinder's comments yesterday about the Department of Justice and Holder and Attorney General Holder's fanning the flames of racial divisions, inciting mobs in Ferguson, that sort of thing. Can you comment on that?
Well, I should more closely follow what the lieutenant governor is saying, I suppose, but I didn't see those comments. I saw a headline or two and didn't have time to look into it. I don't think that the Justice Department has done everything they could have done here. I certainly did think last week that both the Justice Department, the Attorney General, and the President were saying the right things about the absolutely unacceptable shooting of two policemen. In terms of the negotiations going on with the department, I don't have much knowledge of that. I have talked to both Mayor Knowles and the Attorney General's Chief of Staff about the importance of getting on with those negotiations. But there's one other negotiation that probably needs to happen, I would think, Chuck, and that's finalizing the voluntary effort going on with the county police department so that they know if they have to play a different role going forward, short-term or long-term with Ferguson, that their patterns and practices investigation has been completed with what I believe everybody, including me, thinks will be a very positive result. But that needs to be done. There is likely to be some role, either short-term management or longer than that, for the county department. But I'm now doing everything I can to encourage the Justice Department to finish up the third of the three investigations they had going on. One on the events surrounding the death of Michael Brown. One was the pattern and practices of civil rights investigation of the Ferguson Department, and one was the voluntarily entered into study that the county police asked for. And finishing that study, I think, is critically important. And obviously, whatever negotiations the city of Ferguson and the Justice Department have, both need to enter in that with good faith and try to arrive at a result that produces the kind of policing in the city of Ferguson that both the department should want and the people that pay the bill, the taxpayers and citizens of Ferguson, should want.
Hi, Senator. As part of the strategy to block the job cuts slated for Fort Leonard Wood, how vital is it, in your view, to undo the sequestration cuts, and how realistic is that?
Well, I've been talking to people at the Defense Department for a long time now about Fort Leonard Wood, and particularly in the context of any downsizing in the military. I think we've made real progress in what at one time looked like that the training cuts could come disproportionately to Fort Leonard Wood, to my current belief that whatever training cuts there are in the training mission at Fort Leonard Wood will be proportional to them and the other bases that do enlistment training. There's some logic, if you're going to be downsizing the force in any way, that while you downsize at the top, that you also downsize by not bringing as many people in. And my greatest concern there, Deidre, was that the discussion that appeared to be happening, that Fort Leonard Wood had so many other things going on that maybe they could take disproportional cuts in the training mission that they have. I now am of the belief and certainly hopeful that that doesn't happen. Talking to both the head of the Army, General O'Nero, who's been to Fort Leonard Wood in the last few months, and the Secretary of the Army, John McHugh, who's been to Fort Leonard Wood in the last few months, I think they clearly understand that this is one of the unique assets of the defense system. There's no energy availability problem at the fort. There's no water availability problem at the fort. There's no environmental problem at the fort. There's no encroachment problem at the fort. And there aren't many of our installations that can say that in all of those critical areas. And, of course, unbelievable public support, a overflow crowd of at least 2,000 people that were at the public hearing on this topic of what would happen at the future of our bases. They've had those all over the country. I don't know that anybody's had this kind of a response. And Senator McCaskill and I were there, along with Congresswoman Hartzler and the governor, and I don't know that that response has been seen in many places. So we continue to advocate for the fort, the unique missions there, the opportunity for all of these schools to work together. I think my belief is, up to right now, the biggest victory that I think we've achieved is that the training mission there is as secure as the newly enlisted training mission is anywhere in the system, and that's a good thing.
Good morning, Senator.
Yes, Jack.
Following up on the question of sequestration, I'm concerned that the attempt to fund the military spending by sidestepping sequestration may be a dead end, with Democrats likely to oppose it and Obama likely to veto it. Is it worth the time to go down the path with this overseas contingency operations funding?
Well, I think the reality, Jack, of the budget is that the budget's really hard to do. It's one of the hardest tasks that you ask a Congress to do. The minority never participates in the budget. So at the end of the day, 51 Republican senators and 218 Republican House members have to pass a budget. And you have to pass that budget, which doesn't go to the president for his signature. So it's not a law. It's a resolution that binds only the Congress as they move forward to the next steps in appropriation, but still critically important, but it can't possibly repeal the Budget Control Act. And so I think putting some things in there like a contingency fund, or looking at overseas contingency spending for part of defense needs, are going to be things you're going to look at anyway. It's okay for the budget to reflect that, and appropriate for the budget to reflect that. But it's the only realistic number for the budget to reflect is the number that the law actually allows us to appropriate in the discretionary side of the budget. So our goal as a Congress over the next 2 weeks, between now and the end of next week, it needs to be to get a budget passed in the House, a budget passed in the Senate, and then use that next week or so to get House and Senate budget leaders together to say, how do we bring these two things together so that we have the benefits of a budget for the first time, Jack, in 7 years? It's fundamentally amazing that not only has there not been an agreed to budget in 7 years, but only once in the last 5 years did the Senate even try to pass a budget. And I hope this is an important first test, frankly, of the new majority, and I think it's important that we meet that test.